Death and extreme trauma followed him throughout his law enforcement career. He's here to talk about a couple of incidents that had a profound impact on him. He's now retired from law enforcement, and his experience guides him as a mental health therapist. Welcome to the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. In the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, we are joined by special guests talking about their experiences, the realities of investigating crimes, plus those who have experienced horrendous trauma. Police, first responders, military, and victims of crime share their stories. Hi, I'm John J. Wiley. In addition to being a broadcaster, I'm also a retired police sergeant. Be sure to check out our website, letradio.com, and also like us on Facebook. Search for the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Be sure to follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. Newsbreak is your number one local news app for current events, free live news for you and your community. Download the Newsbreak app today for free and be sure to follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. Connecting with us from California, we have Don Bradley on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Don is a retired police officer. He was hurt in line of duty and retired after a long ordeal. We're not here to talk about that, believe it or not. I have a lot in common with that. But death has followed him throughout his career. Death and trauma had a huge impact on him. And you could say it motivates what he does today. He is a therapist, a mental health therapist in Brentwood, California. The best way to find him is go to psychologytoday.com. Look for Brentwood, California, and look for Don Bradley. I believe he's a fourth entry down right now. Don, thanks so much for your service. Number one. Number two, thanks for being a guest on the show. Very much appreciated.
I appreciate the opportunity to kind of get the message out there. Thank you.
One of the things that a lot of people just don't tend to comprehend, and I have an old saying that if you've been doing policing long enough, you're going to get dinged up emotionally, mentally. It's inescapable. But the amount of trauma and death that follows you throughout a career, in some areas more quickly than others, but all of them is going to get to you. I don't think people totally understand the impact and the amount of the nonstop trauma they see and experience.
Well, I think what you don't realize is that you have the death that you experience personally. And then with first responders, you have the death that is the worst situation for every person whose call they go to. And they do that on the regular.
Right. And it just never stops. There's an old saying, I think it was Joseph Wamba said that 95% of police work is sheer boredom, followed by 5 minutes of life and death adrenaline.
Absolute chaos. Yeah, of course.
And it's back and forth. And back. Sometimes it's multiple times a shift. And that was the best way to explain it for me. We go through periods of just call after call after call after call, routine, 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 and all of a sudden it's a life or death situation. And that has an impact on you as well. Shift work has an impact on you. Not eating well, not doing all the mental health things that we should do can have an impact, but we'll talk about that later. I have a funny feeling we're preaching to the choir. When I said
indeed
death followed you throughout your career, you had a DOA as soon as you were out of the academy. DOA, dead on arrival. Can you talk about that?
Right out the gate. Right out the gate. My second week after getting into my solo car, I get detailed to one of those apartment complexes, a retirement apartment complex, right? And the neighbors, it's pretty classic. Neighbors, you know, haven't heard from the neighbor. So we bust the door open, and she's got the thermostat turned up to 90 degrees. When she wanted to be warm, and she wanted to be warm, and she got out of the bathtub, right? But she died in the bathtub. She had a plunger, like, laying between her legs, which I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. What is this happening? What kind of sicko situation we got here? Ended up being that she was using the plunger to adjust the water temperature, like she'd turn it on and then turn it off. Like she'd use the rubber part to adjust the thing. Right. And it was just laying there. But we let the water out. Of course, you know, I'm not prepared. You know, your brain's not prepared for that smell.
No.
That comes after the water. Well, she was a tiny Asian lady, and she ended up absorbing, you know, 80% of the water that was in the bathtub. So she had ballooned up like she was, you know, being squeezed out the end of a tube of toothpaste, right? And so it was, that alone was shocking. And you stack on top of that smell that never goes out of your mind and stays there forever. And then coroners come, they show up, they start to push the gurney in, but the place is too small. And of course it's blazing hot. It's 90 degrees in the summer, by the way.
Right.
And so they take the bag and they put it back in the actual bathroom and leave the gurney out in the hall. And they're doing this, and the part of, that still shocks me to this day was the expressions on the coroners. Nothing. Zero. Didn't bother them at all, right?
Or at least kind of it used
didn't
to
externally
it.
Bother them.
Right. Well, right? Here's what we used to do. And my first DOA was when I was in field training. I don't really count that. But very similar, my first one I had on my own. But we had a thing, and I got to ask you this. When I was promoted as sergeant and I was acting lieutenant, whenever we had a bad DOA, a decomposing body that was bloated, all those things, you'd call all the rookies to show up because they had to learn how to handle it. And one of my things was I would eat a slice of pizza. No matter how sick I felt, I would never let them see that. That you had to learn how to deal with, number one, you don't touch the body. You don't move a bloated body because it's going to blow up on you. You think the smell is bad now? Oh, my goodness. But here's the question. My first DOA, I was a young patrolman, and it was a guy, an older guy, in a bathtub like you, and a modified kind of like old folks home. And I was like, how do you know he's really dead? And all these weird thoughts are going through your mind. Did that in your mind at all? It's like, oh, what do I do? I knew what to do, but I was so afraid of screwing up and classifying this person as DOA.
It had more to do with not wanting to look bad. After when you get into it a little bit, it's not about you looking bad, it's about you not screwing up. At first, you got somebody, everything that you're doing is being scrutinized. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, I don't have a template for how to deal with this stuff, right? On the outside, I'm looking calm, cool, collected. But on the inside, I'm like, what the is happening right now?
Yeah.
Right? How do I deal with this? Where's the spot in my brain where I'm supposed to put this, right? And so the coroners come in there, they pick her up. As soon as they pick her up, she just splits out everywhere. Everything comes out. And then, and I'm stone-faced, but I'm in shock. I'm like, what is happening right now? Is this a movie? And the coroners are there, and I'm watching this thing in shock. And they're putting her back in the bag, and just like it's not like they're shopping.
Right.
And after it was over, I got a pat on the back and I said, hey, you did a good job. You acted very professional. I'm like, oh, does shock look like professionalism? Because that's ultimately what it was. Afterwards, I'm like, and I'm in my car going, I won't say I was melting down in my car because I thought, well, is this the type of thing that's going to be normal? Right. And coming out doing it, I was like, okay, well, I guess this is what it's going to be. And so you sort of haphazardly set that template, just kind of toss it up there and go, okay, that's the bar. And then after that, it's like, well, setting a bar is ridiculous because something comes in at you next week that's completely different, melts a different part of your brain. And then after a while, you just go, I can't bring any emotions to these scenes because it's the worst scene in somebody's life.
Right.
But I can't contribute to it.
And the end of life is really not as dignified for many people as Hollywood would portray it. And absolutely. I feel badly for the first responders that have to show up and do those things. We're talking with Don Bradley. He's a retired California police officer. He was hurt in line of duty, retired. He is now a mental health therapist. We're talking about death and trauma. This is the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. One of the questions I get all the time, why are you always promoting the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show Facebook page? Well, because there's no better place on Facebook. That's it. It's simple. Everything about the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast is right there, including great photos, stories you'll want to see, you'll want to share, memorials to law enforcement officers who were killed in line of duty, all that and more. Plus, old episodes of the show can be found on our Facebook page. Just do a search for Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show on Facebook and be sure to click like and or follow. We'll see you there. We're return conversation with Don Bradley on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Don is a retired California police officer, hurt line of duty, retired after a long ordeal, which we will talk about at another date. It's fair to say that death and trauma followed him throughout his entire career. And that motivates a lot of what he does today, which is being a mental health therapist. Best way to get a hold of Don, go to psychologytoday.com. Look under Brentwood, California. Look for Don Bradley. He should be the fourth entry down. Don, one of the things that struck me was, I guess I can't think of the right word. It's the way that people live, and more particularly the way they die quite often in police work, is very undignified. And as a young police officer, I'm there, and you have to document. There's certain things you got to do. You got to make sure it's not a homicide, all those things. You've got to play it by the book, but it's very intrusive. Did you feel that way with your first DOA?
Well, it was, you're right. It is very undignified, but, and it's one of those things where, you know, she wouldn't have planned it that way, because I guarantee you she wouldn't have wanted to be found in a bathtub like that, of course. Right. So that just goes to show you that it's not planned. And so trying to maintain a sense of dignity in the face of all this chaos, it comes retrospectively where you're sort of looking, how can I sort of wrap this up in a way that at least is an homage to their dignity that they didn't necessarily have, right? And right. And so what you do is you just try to be as, I say cordial, because cordiality is not something that, but with whomever you're going to be dealing with, you know, from the family, and realizing that may very well be the very first death that they've seen, the very first family member that, you know, might be the matriarch of the family. It could right. be all these things attached to it. But you can't think about that at the time.
How old were you when you handled this first one?
Oh boy, 30, I want to say.
Okay, so you came into police working a little bit later in life. But the thing I'm getting is,
yeah, I did.
Is there's nothing that really prepares you for this? My first DOA that I handled I was 22. And I thought I really had it going on, but I really did not have a clue. And one of the things about policing in general, it's a very general thing. You see some shocking things, some things that I'll say this. They pop up in your memory bank when you least expect them to, or at least wanted to. One of them was you had someone that had died. And when you got there, they were being eaten by their dog. Am I correct?
Well, so here's the call we got, you know, it's pretty classic. Mail's starting to pile up, newspapers starting to pile up, right? And so I knew that a dead person was going to be there. That's tip the sign. So we bust in the door, and there's piles of dog poop every couple of inches. And then and I remember, because the door opened up and it had like a tile, like tile little entryway, and there was poop everywhere. And in the one pile of poop right by the front door was a human thumb. And I was like, oh, this can't be good. And so I tiptoe through, literally through the landmines, and go to the back bedroom, come to find out she'd died of a heart attack. She practically died standing up. She was dead before she hit the ground. Cause if you see where she, had some sort of event hit the wall, and then just slid down the side of the wall into the face first into the ground. Well, the dog, you know, poor thing. Honestly, that's the animal that I feel the sorriest for. The driver of the lady's car had gone. The dog was still around. And when I found the dog in the back bedroom, looked under the bed, that was the most, I can still see that picture in my head of looking right directly in the dog's eyes. And the dog just looking like, hey, I didn't want to do this. You know, I did what I had to do to survive, and I felt really bad.
Right.
And it was nasty because it'd been, you know, a couple weeks since they found her. And the most profound part was the daughter showed up, and I don't have any right to tell her that she can't see her mother. But I said, this is not the last image that you want of your mother.
Right.
And so that's about as much as you can emotionally let out in that moment. Right. So she took the dog, and I mean, and it's, you know, that we develop a kind of a sick humor to be able to deal with all the nastiness. Right. So mm-hmm. it's one of those things. I said, you'll never be, honestly, you'll never be closer to your mom than with that dog. And I didn't mean it in a sick way that it came across, but it was 100% true. The feelings in that dog and the guilt and all that stuff, you can heal by virtue of, you know, taking this thing in and sort of not wanting a picture of your mom and how it all ended. Right. That's dignity.
When you first talk about this, and we did talk a little bit beforehand, it's almost like, and this does happen, and I'm a big dog person. I have Rottweilers, and my wife and I have had them for 25 years. We love the breed. We also have cats as well. But we hear reports about people being attacked and mauled to death by their dogs, and that's the first thing that comes to mind, but that was not what happened in this case.
Absolutely not. No, it was innocent. The dog, in fact, when the dog, when I went to approach it, he wasn't angry. He didn't snap. He didn't do anything. He wasn't feral that way. He looked guilty. He's like, it almost in his face was saying, I'm sorry. I did not want to do this. This is my owner. I know. Right. That sadness was like so in his face. And so when I did the whole anti-terrorism thing and I learned how to read facial expressions, I found that I was looking right in this dog's soul and going, wow, I feel really bad for this. I wanted to take care of the dog.
Right. No, look, I get it. I get it 100%. And it's one of the things that, I don't know about you, Don, but I can't really put the words certain feelings. I know what you're saying now.
Well, if you think about feelings are the color in the painting, and we're going to paintings that we don't want to see the color in.
Right.
Right. And then what happens is we get really good at not putting the color in the painting because we're practicing it. But we also got a lifetime of being told that, you know, men are men and men can't cry and rub some dirt on it, you know, and just all that avoidance. And then when you go into a first responders, you can't feel that stuff. And then there comes a day when that container gets all the way full and you don't just start thinking about events from there forward. You start thinking about every colorless painting. And it becomes overwhelming. And then that weight just kind of jams down on top of your head.
Did anything prepare you for this? Was there any training that prepared you for this type of scenario?
How can there be? I mean, because honestly, we say it's what we signed up for, right? We go, oh, yes, I'm prepared to take somebody's life because it's what we signed up for. And then we lump everything else, all this lack of preparedness, all the shock and all this other stuff, into the what we signed up for category. And to be perfectly honest, you have no way of knowing that that's what was going to happen. You didn't know you were going to see these things at such a pace and be so and get so crusted over because you have to stuff this thing down. There's no way you can prepare for that.
No, there's not.
And then
not.
As things start to bubble up, it gets worse and worse.
One of the things I say very quickly is that, you know, I signed up for this, yes, but I had no idea. I thought I knew how intense it was going to be, the amount of violence and trauma, but it was far more than I anticipated. We're talking about Don Bradley. He's a retired California police officer hurt in line of duty. And we're talking about trauma and death following him throughout his career and how it's led him to becoming a mental health therapist. If you're on the Clubhouse drop-in audio chat app, be sure to look for me and follow me. My name's John, the letter J, Wiley, W-I-L-E-Y. You can also search for @ LET Radio Show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Have you been to our website lately? LETradio.com. That's LETradio.com. One of the new features there. Other podcasts. Check it out. You'll find a button right on the homepage. And you'll find access to a wide variety of podcasts absolutely free. That's on our website, LETradio.com. It's our conversation with Don Bradley on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Don is a very interesting guy. He's a retired California police officer. He was hurt in the line of duty, retired after a very long ordeal, which we will talk about at another time. And death and trauma and violence has followed him throughout his career. And it has impacted him. It probably is fair to say led to what he does today, which is a mental health therapist. The best way to get a hold of him is to go to psychologytoday.com. Look for therapists under Brentwood, California, and look for Don Bradley. Last time I checked, he was a fourth entry from the top. One of the things that I do remember, Don, very early in my career was I got a call from a dispatcher. He said, call me, and which is never a good sign. It's usually a bomb threat or something that you don't want to do radio, but it was for a death notification. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. He said, go to such and such address. Locate such and such a people. And if it's them, let them know that their 23-year-old son was killed in a car accident in Ohio. And here I am. I was 22, 23, same age, thought I had it going on, thought I knew what I was doing. I was starting to feel my oats about policing, and knocked at the door, and nothing. There's absolutely nothing that can prepare you for letting someone know that their loved one that is dead. And the reactions can run the gamut from them being shocked to bawling to screaming to, in this case, they said nothing. They said thank you. And afterwards, I felt devastated. I just gave people the worst news of their life. And I'm sure you went through that as well.
Oh, well, the one thing that I remember is a dry mouth that can't be described. And as I approached the front of the house, it seemed like a movie set. Because I don't remember any depth on it. I just remember the front of the house. And I'm walking up there, and in my head I'm going, what am I going to tell these people? I can't believe I've got to deliver the because I had young children at the time, and I thought, I am about to go up to this house and tell them that their daughter is dead. And I was like, what am I supposed to do? And the emotions are just trying to burst out, but they can't because I'm not allowed to, because if society says that we're not doing that and being a first responder says you can't do that because you got to keep it together. But you have to keep it together in the delivery of the worst news of somebody's life. And then after you're done, you got to go and move on to the next one. But I just remember walking up to the door, and I stood at the door, and I was like, in my head, I'm like, what am I going to do? And my brain's going, you got to do it, Don. You got to do it. You got to do it. And I reach up and I tap on the door. And as soon as I tap on the door, it opens up. And I'm like, ugh, it felt like somebody punched me in the stomach. I was kind of hoping nobody would answer. But they did. And I said, I really hate to inform you that your daughter has died in a DUI accident. And she just melted to the ground.
Yeah.
And I had to stand there and I'm like, what do I do now? Because I can't walk over and pat her on the back and say it'll be okay, because it's not going to be okay.
No, there's nothing you can do that's going to make it all right. You can't take it back.
Nothing. Nothing. But it also would be insincere. And so I just stood there like I was, at attention and waited. In fact, I don't even know if I went in the house. I don't think I did. I think I just stood right there. And they eventually got to the point where I think the husband came in, said, okay, thank you. And then closed the door. And I was like, I don't even remember walking back to my car because it was so. Because the thing is, you're dealing with this massive emotional weight that just sort of gets thrust upon you, and you have to say, I'm not only going to hold this weight, I can't show any expression that I'm holding it, and it's bursting to get out, But I didn't realize that at the time. It was just one of those things, and ever since then, when I was dealing with situations like that where that emotional weight is sort of accumulating, I started to realize, yeah, this got to go somewhere. We can't just sit there, that signing up for it, holding on to it, keeping it, never giving it away it's not only unrealistic, it's dangerous. And so through my own internal sort of caveman-like process, I started to look at, what's the way that it can be described to sort of like approach this and start to deal with it. And what I realized was that there's this certain amount of permission that you have to give yourself, right? Because I tell everybody, you gotta give yourself permission to actually allow emotions to come out, because it feels like a betrayal when they do.
Right. It
is. And it's that idea that it's a muscle that you are basically told that you have to atrophy, and then whenever it comes time to put weight on it, you can't lift anything.
Two things you said that really hit me right between the eyes. Number one is the extreme upset beforehand. I don't even know how to tell people this. And by the way, we did all death notifications in person. And it's not like homicide detectives that do that, where the people know or they may not be aware, but they've got some sort of relationship with the person. This was dead out of the blue. You rapped on a door,
right,
and it immediately opened, and you have to tell them. And there's really no
CHP,
way.
CHP is the first person to know that that stuff happened, and they send it to us and go, guess what? You got to drop this bomb on those folks.
And so the other thing is, what we were trained, and it feels so miserable, is the best way to handle is just to tell them, not to sugarcoat it, not just
rip the bandaid off,
just come right out with it. And then here's what really, and I want to get your response on all three of these things, almost waiting for permission for them to decide what to do with you afterwards. And that's the really awkward part. I don't know what to do. Do I go in the house? Do I have a cup of tea? Do I wait for them to shut the door? Do I say, thank you, officer? And that's, or do they scream? Do they yell? What is it? I don't know what to do. And I didn't know how to handle it afterwards.
Well, I was prepared, fully prepared to take blows, right? To for somebody, because I'm like, oh yeah, of course. That's probably what I'd do.
Right.
You're telling you, that person that I have in front of me is telling me the worst news of my life. And so you are basically putting yourself in harm's way by making yourself the enemy to the worst information they're ever going to hear. And so I'm like, if she wanted to strike me, I'd be like, go ahead.
Yeah, you just take it. I've been called every name in the book. I've been yelled at. I've been screamed at. I've had people pound on my chest. I was wearing soft body armor at the time, but it didn't matter. There's no set rule. There's no set rule book on how to handle it except to tell them the truth as bluntly as you can and to take whatever reaction there is.
Well, body armor doesn't block those blows.
No, you feel it, but I couldn't respond. It's not like you're arresting the mom. It was getting at it. She's like, I here's the other part. I could see you. I'm painting a picture in my head of standing at the door when it's over with, and you're not sure what to do with yourself.
Well, I'm the door's closed. I'm still facing it, and I have to will myself to go turn around, walk directly back to the car. Whatever needs to come out can come out once you're back there. And all it was sort of, all I did was sort of scrutinize things I could have done better. How I could have said it better. I could have delivered it. I could have been on another call, so somebody else would have to do
that. Yeah.
Right. That's the thing, is what we do is we look back on it because that's all we can. And in the absence of having control over that situation, which I didn't, what we try to do is the only way we take control is by taking responsibility. And it's like, and nobody there to correct us, it ends up weighing heavy on us.
Well, we did the coulda, shoulda, woulda, and that was all part of how you got better at your job. And fortunately, we had a lot of senior officers that would do the same thing. And after it was over, not in front of people, they would call you aside and say, this is how you should handle this, and here's the reasons why. And I tell people this all the time. I'm like significantly older than Don. When I started, I was broken in. I was trained by Vietnam combat veterans that were police. And we had a couple of command staff that were Korean War veterans. And if you want to talk about people who said, here's the famous saying, suck it up, buttercup. You're the Baltimore police. You got a job to do. You can lick your wounds later. We're talking with Don Bradley, retired California police officer, hurt line of duty, retired after a long ordeal. We're talking about trauma, death, violence, and how it shapes what he does today. Of all the radio stations in the United States, there are no other shows like the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. And on Facebook, there's only one official page. Do a search on Facebook for the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show, and be sure to like the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show Facebook page. There's so much more heading your way. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. It's free. And get the latest crime and law enforcement news on the Newsbreak app. It's simple, easy, and free. Just download the Newsbreak app. Then search for and follow the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show and podcast on the Newsbreak app. Back to our conversation with Don Bradley on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Don is retired California police officer, hurt line of duty, retired after a long ordeal, which I can only imagine. And now he is a mental health therapist. The best way to find Don is go to psychologytoday.com. Look for find a therapist, Brentwood, California, and Don should show up. He is, I believe, the fourth one from the top. One of the things that
Northern California, Brentwood, not the Southern California.
Gotcha.
Brentwood.
When we talked, so much I could imagine from your career that's very similar to mine. And one of the things is that and I tell people, when I was policing, I knew what my job was. I knew what my role was. I knew how to do that very well. The problems for me really started when things got quiet and I was retired. Is that fair for you?
What I realized, or at least what I've realized with the first responder clients that I have now that have gone through their full careers and retired, is that that is 100% true. The statistics on suicide by first responders after retirement was staggering. Yeah. And now it makes a lot more sense because you've only prepared yourself for the time you're working, and when that gets taken away from you, your purpose is gone, and pretty soon it spirals if you're not taking care of the mental aspect.
Well, one of the things that I had to learn how to do was I had to learn how to find things to do that occupied my mind, because when I wasn't doing that, and my mind would go back to the bad stuff.
Well, the thing I noticed is that first responders create this vision of how their career is going to go, and they sort of crystallize it, and as they start to go down this path, and these things that they had no way of predicting were going to be coming up start popping up, they start, you know, they get injured, or their career takes them in a different direction, or they don't stay long, they go somewhere else. It still has to rectify itself against that original vision because they don't go in and change it. And so everything they do that's off that path feels like a failure, right? And so when you don't have that purpose anymore, you're like, well, you're not doing it just to stay busy. You got to find a reason. You got to find a reason to live.
Right. And I'm a firm believer in finding a purpose from your pain. That adds purpose and a mission to what you went through. And for me, when I retired, I was totally devastated because my career didn't go the way I wanted to. I wanted to retire after 25 years. That's the way it was.
Sure.
Did you find at the end of your career, were you ready to leave policing, or did you have unresolved things and it's like, this is what motivated me to want to help and share with what I've learned from my experience as a mental health therapist?
Well, my time after being a police officer was I was pretty tore up, right? It was an inauspicious ending. Didn't want it to go that way. Was really caught up with drugs and alcohol and stuff like that. And so I was struggling for the longest time. And then I got to the point where I'm like, well, it's either take your own life or figure it out, because something's not right. And so the taking my own life thing, we danced on that edge for a little bit. But then when I got to the spot, I was like, okay, what is it that I needed to be able to do this? If I did it again, what would I need to be able to do? And I realized that I'm working from a severe Neanderthalic deficit of this emotional awareness. And it's not emotional awareness. Everybody in law enforcement, for the most part, is really smart, but it's not about being intellectual. It's about dealing with the emotional impact of everything that you've dealt with and trying to use that pain to actually help benefit somebody else. And I've gone through so much. I'm like, well, I've got to point this into some positive direction. And then as I started to realize sort of what it was that the hurdles that I myself faced about this, like I said, this idea of giving yourself permission, because there's three things that got to happen in order for change to occur. And they sound stupidly obvious. You got to accept that something's going on. You've been depressed for 20 years. You've been depressed for 20 years. It's not who you are.
Right.
You got to accept the level to which that thing is negatively affecting your life. First responders are terrible at this. I only drink a little bit. Yeah. Everybody else thinks you're an alcoholic. But until it changes
in
you,
I'm not laughing at you, Don, but I've been sober 32 years now for a reason.
Yeah.
And I don't understand to this day the correlation between PTSD or trauma and alcohol, but I just know it's not a good combination for this guy.
It is not. It is absolutely not. But the last thing is you have to give yourself permission to act on your own behalf. You got to realize that starting this emotional process and sort of leaning into it, it goes past all those, you know, the times as a kid being told that you weren't allowed to, being times as a first responder being told that you had to keep it inside and all this kind of stuff. And we get really good at it. So you have to specifically go in there and go, hey, that sadness you felt at that call, that despair you felt at that call, that this, those are all real. That didn't just go away. You didn't ignore it to death. It just stuck back in a container. And at some point that bill is going to come due. And then when you start paying that bill, if you don't give yourself permission to pay that bill, then you're going to feel like you failed completely, that it's completely miserable. You don't have any coping mechanisms whatsoever. Or at least the ones you have are the coping mechanisms that have run out, right? The drinking, the working overtime, the intellectualizing, all that stuff, just, it doesn't work anymore.
Well, it worked until it didn't work anymore. And then I was shocked. It felt like someone pulled the rug out from underneath. The truth was the downfall started for me much, much earlier than that. And before we get into you shifting gears of what you do today, something you said that really resonated with me was, I had to learn to accept that these things happened and accept that I'm responsible for how I behave. I didn't cause these things. I'm not God. I'm not Superman. I couldn't predict the future, but I am solely responsible for what I do.
100%.
And the last thing you said was, the sadness. There are times, not like it used to be, but there are times where extreme sadness comes over me out of absolutely nowhere.
Well, if it's any consolation, it doesn't come from nowhere. It just comes from this idea of, what am I supposed to do with this? Right. And you go, it comes from, if it doesn't come from the place that you're at, it comes from the place that you were.
Right.
And I mean that sort of metaphorically over all this time. And it's like, it's all these things you see, all the things you smell, and all the memories that you have. They're down there going, are we going to deal with this yet? Are we going to take care of this? No? Okay, well, then we'll just stay down here. And then eventually it's like, okay, it's got to come out. We got to deal with it. It's a weight that, so if you think about it like lifting weights, right? When you go in, do you still hold a dumbbell from the very first time you worked out? No, of course not, right? You allowed yourself to put it down, start over again, try the next day. Well, with the stuff, with the emotional stuff, we pick up these things and then go, part of what I signed up for was holding on to this for the rest of my life, which I think is a bunch of
it's not effective. It doesn't work. And I was fortunate. I had someone who pushed me. My now ex-wife really pushed me hard to get better and find a way to get better. And when you said something, it's like, look, something's got to give. And, you know, our police, our firefighters, our EMTs, our corrections officers, our dispatchers, I can see it. I can see it. I can understand it, where all of a sudden the option becomes death by suicide. And I hate that it happens, but it's been going on since before I can policing. And it happens to our military veterans as well. And also victims of crime. They don't know how to handle this. And I want people to know there's light at the end of the tunnel. Just when you think it's absolutely darkest, it gets better. And you're living proof of that, aren't you?
Absolutely. And you know what's funny is I can explain to the first responder mentality why you feel like when you run out of options, that there are no other options. You got this team of horses pulling your life, and one of the horses is basically saying, I haven't run the whole time. You've just been dragging me along. And you try each one of these horses to say, will you be able to get me through this? And they pull and pull and pull. Pretty soon you're like, hey, horse who hasn't been running, exercising, the emotional horse, I need to put weight on you. I need you to help us out. And the horse is like, I can't.
So
I've never done it. It's not an option.
You spend your days now helping as a mental health therapist. What's the best way to find you, to get in touch with you and talk with you, schedule an appointment with you?
Well, I would say reach out to Psychology Today, Don with two N's, Bradley, in North California's Brentwood. I am in the belly of the beast when it comes to dealing with the traumas of first responders and the all the other external challenges that come along with that. But I'm not, to be perfectly honest, I'm not necessarily trying to promote myself more than I'm just trying to promote this idea that you don't, that doesn't have to end that way.
That's exactly right.
Have options that you don't know.
And by the way, if you want to get in touch with them, just contact me and I will do that for you. Don, thanks so much for your service. Very much appreciated. And thanks for being guest on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. Also very much appreciated.
Thank you very much for taking the time. I appreciate it, man. Be well.
I'd like to thank our guests for coming on the Law Enforcement Talk Radio Show. The Law Enforcement Talk radio show is a nationally syndicated weekly radio show broadcast on numerous AM and FM radio stations across the country. We're always adding more affiliate stations. If you enjoyed the podcast version of the show, which is always free, please do me a favor and tell a friend or two or three. I'll be back in just a few days with another episode of the Law Enforcement Talk radio show and podcast. Until then, this is John J. Wiley. See ya.